Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. StoryCorps' famous Airstream trailer recording booth is coming to St. George and Springdale beginning April 24th, running through most of May. You can sign up for a recording time and invite a loved one or friend to record memories and more with you. Then you'll get a recording of the conversation. It'll be archived in the Library of Congress. So today we'll preview Utah Public Radio's partnership with StoryCorps in St. George and Springdale. UPR co-station manager Carrie Bringhurst is with me. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Tom. Always appreciate being able to sleep in.
Yeah, that's right.
Kirsten did Morning Edition, so I could be here with
sleep
you.
Sleep in today. That's wonderful. So we want to talk about StoryCorps. We're also going to hear, give some samples from the last time StoryCorps was in St. George, which was 2013, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while ago. What we have done StoryCorps five times. We've partnered with them two times in Logan, in St. George, as you mentioned, in 2013. I believe it was 2015. We were in the Vernal Uinta Basin area, came back to Logan a year, 2 years ago, and now we'll be in St. George and Springdale. And always look forward to being able to gather stories and share stories and give voice to community members. And we have a great following in Southern Utah, Springdale area, and we wanted to touch base with them, hear what they have to say, give them an opportunity to tell a little bit about what's happening in their community or their personal lives, and then have that archived in the Library of Congress.
So we've given some hints here, and a lot of our audience listening right now will know what StoryCorps is, but what for those who don't, what is StoryCorps?
StoryCorps was a brainchild of David Isay, who, when he was younger, enjoyed hearing stories from his aunts. And at one point, he recorded those stories on a cassette tape. Those of you who know what a cassette tape is, you realize how easy it is to misplace those. And he, after they had passed away, was hoping to hear their voices again and tried to find that cassette tape with their storytelling and was not able to find that. And he came to the conclusion that that should not happen to anyone, that you should be able to hear from your loved ones, learn from them whenever you want, and be able to access that. And so he started the StoryCorps project. And as part of that, he created what is a mobile, portable recording studio, basically, in an Airstream trailer. And for 20 years now, that trailer has traveled the United States back and forth, visiting about 10 places a year. And we have been very fortunate to be part of that, and to be able to help others share their stories, help others capture their family histories, their personal histories, or if you simply want to be able to capture the voice of a loved one so you can hear it at a later time, we've been a part of that as well.
So this, and as we've been mentioning, this is not only do you get a recording, right? Mm-hmm. Your family have a recording. This will be archived in the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
This is you know, permanent. This is wonderful.
And it's kind of cool when you go to the Library of Congress. There's a room. I don't remember the details. I do remember going into that room during a visit to the D.C. area, because now everything's digital. It's archived simply by going to Google and asking for that information. You'll get the recording information and you can access it that way. You'll also get a code with the numerical data information of how you can access that. And then I believe you also get a digital copy. Utah Public Radio also has access to digital copies. And as part of our emphasis on storytelling and learning from others and being able to share experiences, we produce about 52 of those conversations into small segments. We take those major nuggets of information or storytelling, and then we share those once a week with our listeners.
Yeah. I can tell you as a I've been part of that rotating producer team, right? So painful as a producer.
It really
because you get 40 minutes, and a lot of that's so compelling and you have to choose 4 minutes.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Right? Yeah,
and I can't tell you how many times I've been brought to tears listening to these stories. I've also had a lot of moments of laughter.
Yeah,
some of the stories are fairly funny when you hear about examples of family happenings that can be funny. You know, every family has a different personality, or every individual has something that's important to them that they probably don't consider being of importance to others. But oftentimes when I go through, like you said, Tom, and we do this editing process, it triggers something in me, whether it's a memory about a family situation that I've had, or maybe a lesson learned. I remember one story of, and I don't remember the exact details, of a family whose mother had been part of World War II. She was born in France, was then sent to Amsterdam to be safe and protected. And I believe it was her grandson that brought her to the booth to tell that story of hiding in ditches and how it felt to leave her family in France, especially her grandparents. She loved her grandmother and some of the situations that she grew up in. I believe she was housed in the military huts of the Americans that were there to help protect. Just very compelling story. And it was almost as if I was reading a book, or, you know, following through this woman's life. And she talked about the food her grandmother would prepare. And that family probably had no idea that story would have an impact on me, as my father was a German teacher. And I heard a lot of World War II stories growing up. And it felt like home to me to hear that story. But it was so personal. And to know that person was living in our community and had those experiences, I otherwise never would have known that. Mm.
By the way, I should get out the website, upr.org is where you go, upr.org. Frankly, part of what we're doing here is trying to get you to sign up, is what
right.
We're trying to do.
Yeah, we
want you to participate.
We do. We go to a lot of effort to make this possible. It's kind of a competitive thing. You have to apply to have your community be part of this traveling recording studio, and it's a lot of work for StoryCorps to make sure that the booth is maintained, and they journey it across the country. I remember pulling into a Flying J gas station one time to fill up my car, and there was the StoryCorps booth. They were on their way to Idaho, on their way to Boise, and it was so cool because when you see the trailer and you know what that is, you know what that is,
yeah.
Right? So yes, we don't want to have them come here and then nobody show up to record. So yes, part of why we are here today is to encourage you to sign up and take a family member, a friend. Really, it's two people, two individuals. You're not being interviewed by somebody you don't know. You're having a conversation with someone you feel comfortable with sharing stories, or maybe you've already told these stories and you want to have them archived or recorded. So there are two of you in the booth having a conversation, much like Tom and I are having.
So go to upr.org, upper right on the main page is a photograph of the Airstream trailer, and it says record your story in Southern Utah. Then in red it says learn more and sign up. Click on that. You can sign up for St. George or Springdale or virtual.
Right. So the booth will actually be located in St. George, and it will be there the entire time. Once you set up the booth, that booth cannot be moved for that entire month. So the Springdale recordings will be through use of portable recording equipment, and we have a beautiful location. It's dreamy. It's Zion Canyon Mesa overlooking Springdale and Zion Canyon, and that will be for 2 days. On the 6th and the 7th, we'll be there recording in that space. In fact, the facilitators who travel, as I said, all over the country will get to stay in their beautiful facilities, and they are excited. It's like, I don't know, staying in a national park in kind of an exclusive resort type thing, and they've donated that space for StoryCorps and their facilitators. So thank you so much for Zion Canyon Mesa and our friends in Springdale for making that space available. So those of you in Springdale have a beautiful place where you can come, share your conversations, and share those memories. You'll not only remember the stories that you told during that recording session, but you'll remember the experience because of that beautiful, beautiful setting. So, yes, sign up for the Springdale. I believe those are limited spots. Again, we'll only be there for a couple of days. So I think we have four of those, maybe five remaining. The virtual is something you can do. For example, you live in southern Utah or anywhere, and you have a family member that doesn't live in those areas, and you can do this anytime. You can sign up for a virtual conversation. They'll send you a link. You'll link with your storytelling companion, and that will be recorded that way. But I think the best and most memorable experience is being in that portable Airstream trailer. It's very comfortable. It's private. There's something special about sitting across from somebody and having a conversation. That StoryCorps trailer is a special place. So we hope that you will take an opportunity to share your stories and engage in that experience. Sign up.
UPR.org. UPR.org. And then just look for that Airstream trailer and click and sign up. Let's hear one of these segments.
This is from 2013.
2013. Right? And this is Michelle Thomas and Martha Hamm. Let's hear this.
Utah Public Radio presents StoryCorps, an oral history project in conjunction with the National Library of Congress, recorded in May of 2013 in St. George.
My name is Martha Hamm. I'm 60 years old, and I'm sitting with Michelle Thomas, a downwinder.
My name is Michelle Thomas. I'm 61 years old.
Michelle, what's a downwinder?
A downwinder is an individual who was either born or in their mother's womb or was outside of the womb in 1951 through 62. How they got the name downwinder is during the Cold War, the American government was all worked up over the possibility of Khrushchev having atomic bombs. To counter that, the government identified a site where they would detonate very sizable above-ground nuclear bombs. But they did this at the Nevada test site, which is just a little over 100 miles from St. George. They told the people of this area in parts of Nevada, Bunkerville, Mesquite, St. George, of course. Later, during President Clinton's era, some of these documents were declassified, and they had St. George circled on these maps of yesteryear and called it Fallout City, knowing that this would get heavily radiated, although, quite honestly, it went all across the United States and beyond. It was not long after these tests that people in my town began to notice an alarming number of medical issues that had never surfaced. Things ranging from cluster births. The mother would give birth to like a cluster of grapes, a gelatinous matter. People were perplexed. Sometimes they lived long enough to get a diagnosis, and sometimes they just came in from outside and died. This was dirty. It had all manner of carcinogenic radioisotopes. My mother never really believed them, that there was no harm. They kept saying, "You're a part of history. In fact, go up on the hills, on the bluffs, watch them go off." And many people did. And then their hair would fall out the next day. My mother lost a sister, and she died of cancer. And then her very best friend, she was out in her garden one day when a fallout cloud came over. She passed away of stomach cancer. When that happened, my mom became so enraged. My mother is the first activist I ever knew. She formed the group called Downwinders. My mother had them assemble, in the late 70s, 76. I'm trying to think when she was on the People magazine cover. And they did a big story on Mom. It was so hard to be a downwinder and to live with someone who was fighting it and was so enraged that her government had lied. They were not alive to see me diagnosed with salivary gland cancer or breast cancer, which pleased me enormously. It's hard to be a downwinder and suffer the medical issues that come with it and fight for the ones that are as sick and debilitated as I am, but don't have a voice. But I'm too sad and I'm too mad not to tell the story. My mom used to say, because I'd say, Mom, people are talking in town. They think you're being unfaithful to America. And she said, I'm faithful to you. I love her. I'm proud of her, but I never got to tell her that I was proud of her when she was alive. When I teach little children, their eyes are big and wide. And I said, the reason you need to know this story is you must not let it happen again.
These interviews were recorded at StoryCorps, a national initiative to record and collect stories of everyday people. Excerpts were selected and produced by Utah Public Radio. Support for StoryCorps on Utah Public Radio comes from Dixie Regional Medical Center, located on two campuses in St. George, serving southwestern Arizona, southeastern Nevada, and southern Utah. Information at dixieregional.org.
So that is Michelle Thomas with Martha Hamm. That entire interview is archived, and we just got that very impactful, 4-minute segment. Very important story, and especially important that that's archived, that that's recorded, because Michelle Thomas has passed on.
You know, there are a couple of thoughts that come to mind in hearing this story. I had a conversation recently with somebody that is still very involved with the downwinders and those testing sites. And she mentioned to me that there right now is talk of, once again, beginning those types of tests in that same area. And had I not heard this conversation and at the very last saying, let's not have this happen again, could it? Is that something we need to hear from others who've maybe experienced it? Maybe. I also realized that my husband's a downwinder when they mentioned those dates. He was born in the St. George area. So these are reasons why these types of stories are important to me, because they can become very personal. This did not happen to me personally. And yes, I find it, because I'm kind of a curious person. I like to hear stories, but it became personal to me in that I realized my husband is considered a downwinder. I also, at the end, mentioned that we had sponsors, Dixie Regional Hospital. And I think that's important for our listeners to understand as well, that we can't make these types of programs possible without a community support, and in this case, for this upcoming StoryCorps project, we have the City of St. George that is being very, very supportive of the project. They're making it the Werthern Park area available, so we can park that trailer there for a month. That takes up space. They have to provide the power, electricity. They're helping us with marketing. They're letting us put up signs to let people know where to go. So there's all of that coordination that has to happen. And then Alta Bank is also providing some financial support so that we can pay for the gas to get down there. We can pay our producers to produce the content to share these stories. So it really is a community coming together. And your stories are the basis of that. But we all have to work together to make sure these stories are heard and told so we can know more about one another. And then I also mentioned Zion Canyon Mesa, a big part of what we're doing as part of this project.
So we hope you're interested in signing up. You do have to sign up to participate, and just go to upr.org. upr.org. We've got a link there. You could sign up for St. George or Springdale or virtual. And it starts April 24th, goes through most of May, upr.org. Let's take a brief break. We'll be back and listen to some more of these segments from 2013, talk more about your opportunity to participate with StoryCorps, which is coming up. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams today with Carrie Bringhurst, of course, with me, a co-manager and morning edition host and organizer. I think you've been involved in many of these projects.
When I first started at Utah Public Radio as morning edition host in 2007, that was the first I'd been introduced to StoryCorps. And I really didn't have a lot of involvement in that, except that I was asked to help produce the segments that would air. And fell in love with it immediately. Mm-hmm. Since then, having more administrative roles, and we've looked at how we want to prioritize our time and our energies, StoryCorps has always been at the top of that list, as it helps us to better serve our communities that that support us and gives us an opportunity to engage. For example, in Vernal, we spent a month in Vernal getting to know that community. Of course, you and I know that community very well since we both grew up in the Uinta Basin, but not a lot of people know about some of the aspects of the Uinta Basin. And we wanted those stories to be told. And St. George has also seemed like a logical place to spend time and gather stories. So I have appreciated that opportunity during my career here at Utah Public Radio to get to know those of you in these different communities. And I'm really, really looking forward to this time that we'll spend in St. George and Springdale.
UPR.org. Just go to that front page, and there's a photo of the Airstream trailer. And you can,
isn't it cute?
It's very cute.
It's just a fun. It just looks like a great place to be, and it is.
And they've done a great job. You mentioned before. By the way, just click on that, and you can sign up for St. George or Springdale or virtual upr.org. You go inside. It looks small. You go inside, and there's enough space, right, for you and your partner. Also, we should mention that there's a facilitator there in case you get stuck. Many people don't get stuck. They talk for the 40 minutes. It's fine. But if you do, there's a facilitator to kind of prompt you and get you unstuck.
Yeah, and they're important because, I mean, they're actually doing the recording. They're doing the technical end of things. They make sure the mic placement is there, that the sound levels are correct, because they want you to, you know, sound as good as you can. But one thing I've noticed, a lot of times when we're telling a story, and especially if it's with somebody that we've shared this story with, we may forget certain details that seem obvious to us. But as somebody listening to the story, maybe more detail is needed. So a facilitator might say, now, when did this event happen, and where were you, and how old were you when this event happened? What, you know, so they'll just maybe ask a couple of questions. But really, really, it is a very personal conversation between you and your guest, and the facilitator tries to step out of it as much as possible.
So I have a question that I think a lot of people might have, and that I'll introduce this by talking about when my mother and I were preparing to go into the booth in Vernal. So this is a great opportunity, and I really wanted my mother to go in with me. She was willing, definitely, but she had some trepidation. Are people even going to be interested in my story, right? And what are we going to talk about? That was her, you know. So before I reveal what I told her, what would you say? And in general, you know, what are you going to talk about when you and your loved one go into the booth?
Oh, yeah, that is. And, you know, some of us are, again, we don't really think we have anything to share, but that's not the real purpose. I mean, don't look at it as, oh, I have to tell a story that's going to be on the radio. Because, again, you have to give us permission, first of all, to even consider having it air on Utah Public Radio or NPR. And the real purpose of this is for your personal use and for your personal record keeping or historic purposes, or just, you know, maybe there's something you want others to remember you by, or remember somebody else by, that, you know, a story that you've heard about a family member that you want to make sure is heard by others, or something that's important to you, like the Downwinders, a message that you want to share that is something you would like to have in the public. I mean, I think people come for different reasons and for different purposes. And it might be just an opportunity for you to reflect on a time in your life that was very special and meaningful, and you want to remember that and be able to go back and hear that story or share it with somebody else. I know people will use them as Christmas gifts. Right. They'll, you know, record some memories or what have you, and then they'll share that with their families as kind of an audio Christmas card. There's a lot of different reasons. Yeah.
I like this from, I'm taking this, frankly, from, some information you gave to Utah State University, our press release, I guess. In the interviews, two people record a meaningful conversation with one another about who they are, what they've learned in life, and how they want to be remembered. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what I told my mother, and she, you know, the conversation was great. It was very enjoyable. It was wonderful.
As I recall, she talked a lot about her time in Japan.
Yeah.
And I remember that story.
She served a mission in for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Japan. The Northern Far East Mission, that's what it was called then.
Year? Do you remember?
I was in the 50s, early 50s. Yeah,
yeah. So that was a big adventure.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, everybody's got something. You know, everybody's got fascinating stories, even if you don't think it is. So we hope you'll take advantage of this. Well, let's hear another one here. This is our good friends, Carl and Sherry Berger.
This is going to be a difficult one for me.
Yeah.
Carl and Sherry have been longtime friends of Utah Public Radio, and as is the case in many situations, we get to know our members. We get to know these individuals, and Carl and Sherry were... and are very dear to us. Carl has since passed away, and Sherry is no longer living in the state of Utah. She is enjoying some time with her family, and so we miss them both very much. And the title of this story is The Story of Love and Don't Leave Me.
Hi, I'm Carl Berger, and Sherry is my sweet and loving wife.
My name is Sharon Berger, and I'm the wife Carl Berger.
You know, Sherry, we've been married 55 or almost 55 years. Is that right?
That's right.
And it's been a good, good, good run, I'd say, but probably one of the most exciting and most stressful and most interesting years was that one year in 1997.
We were in New Orleans, and we were on our way back. You started pacing around the airport, and I said, "Are you feeling all right?" And you said, I just have to walk." So that's how it started.
And what happened as I got on board the plane was extremely severe stomach cramps. It got worse and worse and worse until by the time we got back to Detroit, I literally said to you, "I really think we've got to get to the hospital."
The emergency room took you in right away.
And they did a wonderful job, I thought, of diagnosing and somewhat, I think, concurred with me, gave me some very strong pain medication, and which worked right away, and we went home and I went to bed. The next morning, I woke up and I stood up and I turned to you and said,
"I don't think I'm going to make it." I called 911. You were incoherent. You weren't talking or anything. So.
And 2 months later, I woke up. What happened during those 2 months?
During the 2 months, a lot of things happened. One of the doctors came and said, he may not make this. A little voice in my head says he's going to be okay.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the diagnosis was a dissected artery, which meant an artery pulled apart somewhere in my abdomen. So that was quite a shock. And that started a long, long series of attempting to recuperate,
right,
which were not really all that successful.
At the time, they had not closed up your stomach. Your stomach was still open because they wanted to heal from the inside out. Mm-hmm. But they had put a mesh across your stomach, and they were pulling the mesh together gently each day. It took them about 2 months to get that closed.
2 months to completely close up the stomach area there. They started to have me try to lift my legs, and I, of course, couldn't do so. But I just despaired that I'd ever be able to walk again because I had no muscle strength. The other problem, of course, was there was mental rehabilitation as well.
But do you remember having MRSA?
MRSA is, of course, that terrible and resistant bacteria that you get often in hospitals. And I had, of course, picked it up because you came in one day and you were completely gowned from top to bottom, mask on, everything like that. And from that point on, everybody that came in the room, they were completely masked and gowned.
Mm-hmm. Those were the times when the doctor said you better call and tell them that it may not be too long. You were suffering from sepsis and pneumonia and
Kidney failure,
mm-hmm. right?
It was one of those things that where you seemed to get well and then you'd get sick, and then you'd seem to get well and then you'd get sick. And one of the interesting things is to having gone through all of this, to be able to let people know that there is hope. It's always out there. You can always reach. And I realized at one point that I was a fighter. I never thought I was, but I realized I was a fighter.
Yes, I coined the word stoic. The doctors would come in and say, "Why is he always smiling?" And I said, "Because he's a very stoic person. He won't let you know that he's in pain."
I want you to know that year changed one other thing in my life, and that was for me to realize how much I terribly love you. Because you were there for me every single day.
Thank you, honey.
And it was just wonderful. I can't believe that you would do all that for me.
Well, you did it for me when I said, "Carl, don't you leave me." Okay.
Maybe that's what gave me the fighting spirit. I'm right. Pretty sure it was.
Right.
Well, it's been wonderful, hon.
Thank you.
It's a great ride.
StoryCorps, that's from 2013 when the StoryCorps booth was trailer was in St. George. Previously, it's coming back beginning April 24th. It's our friends Carl and Sherry Berger.
And we lost Carl a couple of years ago. He was stoic for several years as he battled cancer. And sorry. Yeah. StoryCorps will do this to
it
you
will.
As well.
It really will.
You know, and he stayed in touch with us. Until not very, much close, very close to the time that he passed away. And I know for him that having an opportunity to participate in StoryCorps was something he really looked forward to when it was there in 2013 and wanted that opportunity. And what a great gift for his family to have his voice preserved and that story preserved in the Library of Congress for their grandchildren and future generations to be able to hear that through Carl and Sherry in their own personal voice, because you can just hear the love they have for one another.
It's a beautiful thing, and that's on record now, right, mm-hmm. for us and for their posterity. I was remembering here that Carl Berger came in and participated in a StoryCorps offshoot, a project called One Small Step. And this was a project that StoryCorps had going on to try to bridge political divides and other divides. So we went to St. George and other areas and tried to find people, you know, a liberal and a conservative or whatever it might be.
A cat lover, a dog lover.
Yeah, to kind of bridge divides. And Carl was paired with a young lady, and it was, I think there was a political divide, might have been, but it turned into a beautiful intergenerational conversation.
Yeah, it was.
And I remember one particular part, the young lady, I think, asked him, "What do you hope your legacy will be when you die?" kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah, I think he had been diagnosed with this cancer, and she asked him if he was afraid about dying and afraid of death. And he kind of reiterated what he talked about here and having that hope and always being positive and having a positive perspective. And he was. And again, hearing this story reminds me of that example and very fitting for some of the things that I'm dealing with in my personal life right now. And another testament of why storytelling is so important.
It is.
And why we gather these stories and share them often and in any way that we can. And to be part of a project that gives voice to so many people, no matter what it is that they're sharing, the One Small Step story was specific to trying to address some of the conflicts that individuals might have toward one another. And as you mentioned, that was very effective in bringing those two different people together and finding common ground in a world where sometimes that's really hard to do. So I will always stand by this project as something that's very important to our culture, to our communities, and that is of storytelling.
Go to upr.org, upr.org, to sign up to take a loved one or friend into the StoryCorps trailer in St. George. You can record in Springdale. You can record virtually as well. upr.org. Well, let's hear one more of these before another break.
I love this story.
So this is Cheryl Rogers Barnett and Larry Barnett.
Now, this is the daughter of Roy Rogers. And I love this story for a couple of different reasons. Roy Rogers, you know, many of us might not even know who Roy Rogers is. And I think you'll get a sense from that, from this story. But one of our employees at the time, Terry Guy, actually knew Roy Rogers, and because of a restaurant they had in Apple Valley. So this story is just a lot of fun.
Let's hear this.
Daughter of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, Cheryl Rogers Barnett talks with her husband Larry about her famous parents' legacy of not only fame, but fighting against social norms and loving their family's differences.
I was just a few months old when he and his first wife, Arlene, adopted me. Dad said that when he wiggled his fingers in front of all the baby's faces, that they all cried or screamed. And I just reached up and grasped a hold of his finger. And he called Mommy in California and said, "I found our baby." Mommy's health wasn't great. And after they adopted me, she was sick so much. So Dad started taking me to work with him when she died. And I grew up on the Republic lot. The ladies and gentlemen in the wardrobe and makeup department and the hair department, they were my babysitters, and I got to go into the wardrobe. Oh, that was incredible for a little girl to be able to go do that. That was fairyland. So everybody there, they were like a big family on that lot.
The thing that I've always found interesting, and I think other people have as well, you actually met your stepmother at Republic.
Yes. She started working with Dad in 1943. They made their first movie together, Cowboy and the Senorita. I just thought she was fabulous. Most of the leading ladies that worked with Dad were teenage girls. But women's role in Westerns were either the rancher's daughter, the school marm, or they worked in a saloon. I mean, that was about it for Western movies.
As your mom said, yeah, they weren't much more than decorations.
Yeah.
But until she came along.
She really changed women's role in Western movies. She was just a physical force to deal with. I mean, she was so vivacious and so gorgeous, so talented. And they wrote scripts for her, wrote parts that were much more meaningful. She and Dad were really partners. They had a baby together a couple of years later, and that was my little sister, Robin Elizabeth. And when she was born, she had Down syndrome, and they were one of the first people I've ever heard of that refused to hospitalize Robin. They brought her home. It was really different back then. If you had a child born with a handicap, you were told by the doctors, don't bring them home. It will break your heart. Just put them in a facility somewhere.
As your dad said, they were going to bring her home and raise her with the other kids.
Again, back then, it was so different. So we got mumps at school, and of course, you know, living in a house, eventually Robin got it as well, and she passed away right at her second birthday. So Mom was just heartbroken, and she wrote her first book called Angel Unaware. And that little book has just been incredible. It's gone around the world. It's been reprinted in a whole bunch of languages. Teachers still use it today to teach empathy to their students. It's really wonderful.
Also, with their visibility and popularity at the time, I think they contributed probably as much, if not more, than anybody to research into Down syndrome and the strides that they've made. You know, your dad tells a really an interesting story about that. We were watching some DVDs that were recently made, converted from film, and it was something in Madison Square Gardens. They were performing, and there was Roydale coming into the stadium, shaking hands, you know, patting hands with little kids, and there was this one section that was all handicapped, disadvantaged children. And he turned to me and he says, "You see that? Until she wrote that book, you never saw that."
Yeah, true. You never did.
And that was a legacy of theirs, you know, your mom's faith and what they did for the Down syndrome and the adoption. I mean, that is more of their legacy than the movies they made.
Yeah. Mom ended up, she wrote 28 books, and she wrote books about everything that she was interested in. But she was in charge right up to the very end, and I miss her every day.
Yeah, she was quite a lady.
Wow, there were elements of that story that I had forgotten. Mm-hmm. And as you can probably imagine, the discussion about the individual and the family member with Down syndrome, I have a child with Williams syndrome, and was reminded of having a similar conversation about what we could expect. And this was in the 80s when I was going through it, and there were still some questions as to whether... you know, we're just coming out of institutionalizing some of our loved ones with disabilities. So
I didn't know that. So even in the 80s,
they were talking
about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, just could you really care? They just didn't know enough about. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much institutionalizing, but just what we could handle. And I think that's when I first learned about so many of these things that they talked about.
Yeah.
So that was a trigger for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one of the beautiful parts of any kind of storytelling, right? You get some depth.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about Roy Rogers. Roy Rogers, just a cowboy star.
That's right. That's right.
Movie star for me.
And
had this whole other life.
Yeah. And going in and knowing that this child was to be part of their family because they grasped his finger. What a great litmus test for who should be in our family. I love that. So exactly, Tom, your point on that, we can learn so much from each other.
So we just have a couple minutes left. I guess just some details here. April 24th is when this all begins. The Airstream trailer, StoryCorps' famous Airstream trailer, comes to St. George.
And, you know, here's something for those of you listening. If there's somebody that you feel absolutely needs to be recorded, and maybe they've done something amazing in your community, or they stand out, we are reserving some special spots for VIP guests, and I'd love to hear suggestions that you have of somebody that we could make sure to reach out to have them come and record. Feel free to email me at Carrie, Kerry, .Bringhurst, BringHurst at usu.edu. You can call our main office number if you'd like as well, but it might be interesting to hear who you feel should be included in this project and that you would really like to make sure that their stories are archived.
So here's the way to participate. Go to upr.org, upper right-hand corner on the main page. There's a beautiful photograph of the Airstream trailer, and then it says record your story in Southern Utah, and there's a red button that says learn more and sign up. Click on that, and you can sign up for time slots in St. George, also in Springdale, and virtual as well. It begins April 24th. The time slots through about May 24th or 5th, right?
23rd
through May 23rd. So some of those slots are already gone. We'd like to fill all of those.
We still have plenty of space. Okay. And I'll just say for the virtual, one of the benefits of that, maybe some of you have a situation where you have a loved one that's not able to travel or, you know, that it just really doesn't work for them to go out and about and do these recordings. The virtual is a really nice option where you can do that in an easier way.
Well, we hope you do sign up. Hope you participate. It's a wonderful experience, and then you'll be hearing the results of that pretty soon here.
Yeah,
on Utah
we'll probably start broadcasting those in June. And I just want to again thank the City of St. George for welcoming us, and for Alta Bank, and of course Zion Canyon Mesa, all beautiful locations. I, for one, am really looking forward to spending some time in Southern Utah.
But definitely, me as well. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Hope you do sign up, and hope you've enjoyed these stories. Continue to listen to these stories, and perhaps we'll hear your story as well. You've been listening to Access Utah. Thanks, Carrie, for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.
It's One Sky, Many Cultures. Skywatcher Leo T. here. During these beautiful April days, the skies are blue and the temps are warm. The blossoms are up, and so are you, with the red finches and the yellow warblers warbling and baby owls in the pines. As we evolve through the day and into the evening, by twilight, Orion is fairly well up in the southwest for our viewing pleasure. Striding down to the right with his belt horizontal, the belt points left toward bright, sparkling Sirius and right toward big red Aldebaran. Huge Jupiter grabs your eye above Aldebaran, and a striking image is that of Mars, Pollux, and Castor very high in the west, up above all of the Jupiter stuff. As I look up here a lot lately, I all of a sudden the other night saw that they formed a straight line. And by Thursday, there will be an even straighter line, and it'll hang that way for a few days, so look up there. I've been watching it for weeks as it bends. The lineup will slowly evolve, and it'll be fun to watch as it comes into the coming days. And in the southeast, the full moon almost touches Blue Spica, with one of my favorite constellations, Sublime Corvus the Crow, below. Corvus looks like a bow with the string pulled back and is aiming straight up right now. And early in the morning, before dawn, grab a cup of your favorite hot beverage and behold, through the steam in the southeast, Venus, and down under Venus, Mercury and Saturn hide in the bright dawn all week. And as I mentioned, Corvus the constellation, its name means crow or raven in Latin. Corvus constellation represents Apollo's sacred bird in Greek mythology. It was first cataloged by Greek astronomer Ptolemy in the 2nd century. Corvus is home to a pair of interacting galaxies, the Antenna galaxies. The Antenna galaxies show a likely future of the Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxy, or M31, when the two are supposed to glide through each other billions of years from now. And in Greek lore, Corvus represented Apollo's sacred bird. The Greek Corvus was borrowed from the mythical Babylonian raven Molgamushin, which was usually depicted perched on the tail of a serpent. Babylonians associated the constellation with Adad, the god of rain and storm, because its stars would rise before the rainy season. In the Native American lore, the crow or raven is involved in creation stories as well as other stories, and this interpretation from a painting from Susan Seddon Belay in Pomegranate Communications. Like the raven, the crow wields powerful magic. In Native American myths, the crow restores order to the heavens. A Sioux belief, or Lakota belief, is that it links the crow to abundance and prosperity. One legend tells of a white crow that warns the buffalo every time hunters approach. They also visit and talk to people when we listen. At Skywatcher Leo T, we continue to keep an eye on our only international space station, cruising around the Earth at 17,500 miles an hour or so in lower space orbit, about 220 miles above the Earth. The International Space Station continues to vibrate with life and incoming and outgoing space voyagers as the three-person Soyuz MS-27 mission reached the space station on April 8th, carrying Korean-American NASA astronaut Johnny Kim and two cosmonauts aboard a Russian Soyuz spacecraft. It reached and docked with the space station on Tuesday, April 8th at 4:57 a.m. spaceflight savings time. And oh, by the way, the Russian astronauts, or cosmonauts they're called, Sergei Rysakov and Alexei Zubritsky. You can see the photo from NASA of the Voyagers on the Skywatcher Facebook page. As members of the ISS's Expedition 72 and 73 missions, they'll return to Earth in December. And let's take the little Skywatcher spaceship way out for a view from the Hubble Space Telescope, which began its groundbreaking mission in 1990, forever changing the way we understand our universe. 35 years later, Hubble's science continues to inspire. On the Hubble website are incredible views of deep space, which you can see courtesy of the Hubble team and NASA. They show a deep, deep space view of a star filled of multicolored stars and a new star-forming region of a size not yet seen in our galaxy. The stars are ice or ocean blue. Check it out on the Skywatcher Leo T Facebook page. You can also click on the podcast for a longer version and see beautiful photos and attributions here. Have a look. This program here, Skywatcher Leo T, airs on UPR, KRCL, and KZMU in Moab. See the Facebook page for times. Skywatcher Leo T also is in Wayne County, Garfield County newspaper called The Insider. It's delivered to every P.O. box in these counties. Thanks, ladies. In another Hubble photo are merging star clusters in 30 Doradus. This Hubble Space Telescope image captures two clusters full of massive stars that may be in the early stages of merging. The 30 Doradus Nebula, also widely known as the Terrestrial Nebula, is approximately 170,000 light years from Earth. It is part of the Large Magellanic Cloud, a galactic satellite of the Milky Way galaxy. And you have to be in the southern hemisphere to see it, so let's get a Skywatcher Leo T cruise going. We'll go look at it from the ocean. Keep looking up, look around, and get just a little bit lost in space. Skywatcher Leo T.